Welcome back to We Are the Weirdos, Mister, the podcast for all things cult, camp, queer, and creepy. I am your host, Hillary Michelle Post, and I'm joined once again by Heather.
Hello.
And Julie.
Hello.
And last time the three of us got together was a couple months ago, and we talked about a book adaptation, and it got me thinking about just talking about books in general. I've been reading a lot more lately than I have in years. And so I decided today, instead of talking about a film like we usually do, that the three of us would talk about some of our favorite works of literature and et cetera. So I sent the girls a few questions, and we're going to just talk about their answers and wax poetic about reading. And of course, play along at home. Feel free to, you know, let this start conversations among you and your friends, and maybe you can get some recommendations from us. Maybe we can get some recommendations from you. You can get recommendations with each other, and it'll be a good old time. So let's just jump right in, shall we? So the first thing I asked the girls was what their favorite classic novel is, and that's open to interpretation. I didn't really put any specific timeline in there, but what would you guys say? We'll start with you, Heather. What is your favorite classic novel?
So I have two. The first is my go-to that I always say, and it's The Great Gatsby. And I don't know what my kids are seniors. They read it last year and they hated it. I don't really know why, but they're like, are you serious? That's your favorite? And like, I'm like, oh, it's written by an old dead white dude. I don't really love that.
Right.
But I love the way that Gatsby is written in this like outsider perspective. I love what I gained from it, from when I read it when I was 13 for the first time to like now. Like, it is kind of queer. Like, let's be real.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't catch that when I was reading it when I was 13. But like now, I just love that it's like, it's not written by Gatsby or Daisy. It's written by Nick. And that is such a cool way to write a book. It's so modernist. And I do really love it. And I just never read another book kind of written in that way. And that is one thing that I really like about it. And there's a lot of like imagery and symbolism and things I can talk about with my students. So I like that too. My second favorite classic novel, which might be something Julie's going to say too, I'm unsure, is Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. I love Frankenstein. I love the whole idea of like the whole sociology aspect of the book and like, look what I created. And then what's the word I want? Just abandoned. And like how we learn in like nature versus nurture. I love that about the book. And I love that it's written by a woman. And we could also get into the love triangle, which is Mary Shelley, and Julie can go into that. But anyways, that is my response.
Great. Julie, what would you say is your favorite classic novel or novels?
Actually, I thought about Frankenstein and I thought about Dracula, but I am ready to sit here and declare to you that my favorite, I think, is Jane Eyre.
What?
Interesting.
I love Jane Eyre.
Jane Eyre is great.
I think I've only read it once, but honestly, I loved it. Are we counting The Lord of the Rings as classic novels?
I think so. Yeah.
Is it classic or contemporary? I don't know. But like, you've got me in the middle of like hot Hobbit autumn. Like I am, it's bad. Like I literally last weekend, I watched all of the Lord of the Rings movies. This weekend, I'm going to watch all of the Lord of the Rings movies. I'm currently listening to The Silmarillion.
Oh, so, how's that?
Slow. It's a lot of, it's a lot of history, but I'm going to say Jane Eyre because I really like that story. I love the, like, the hidden spouse and, like, the earnest, like, he's, like, relying on her. She's taking care of his pseudo daughter, his daughter, whatever, And then he just finds something so unexpected and someone that's so plain. And I don't know, there's something about it that I just really, really, really like. I also really like Frankenstein too. And Dracula. Dracula is like almost all epistolary. It's all told like from letters and diaries, which I really like. And like, I mean, there are so many classic novels that are so great.
I did not anticipate you saying Jane Eyre.
Really? I don't know. I liked it. I like it a lot. I remember reading it for the first time and I really liked it.
I teach it. Kids either love it or hate it. There's no in between.
Well, see, I liked what you said about Gatsby because I never think of it in that way. And I need to reframe my thinking about it because I'm going to teach it this year.
Oh, sweet.
So I need to reframe my thinking. So I will allow your words to wash over me and use those to fuel my enthusiasm for my juniors.
Yeah. Julie, how old were you when you first read Jane Eyre?
Like, in my 20s. I was old. I remember. I was babysitting, I remember.
I know what he's going to say.
What?
Your favorite book. I'm not taking your
Oh, yeah.
I know what you're going to say.
Oh, no. Totally. Mine's pretty easy. But before I get to that, I just wanted to touch on Frankenstein because I haven't read it for a very, very long time. But I love the story around its creation more than almost the story itself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, agreed. The idea of this crazy party that, like, kind of turned into this writing contest, which turned into the creation of an entire genre. Like, that is just by a teenage girl. It's like that's just, that's incredible. Maybe not teenage. How old was she?
Yeah, she was pretty young.
She was super young, but I can't remember exactly old. And Julie, you brought up a good question. I wonder if there is an academic answer to what the cutoff is when discussing literature of what we consider classic versus contemporary. Because was Lord of the Rings published in the 60s or 70s?
No, I think it was before that. You know what? Hold on. If you get some clickety-clacking noises.
Oh, that's cool. Do it up.
We'll just vamp for me, man.
Just back while Julie's doing that. She was 18 when she started writing. Mary Shelley was 18 when she started writing Frankenstein.
Okay.
Then yeah. She was 20.
Ah. Technically a teenager. I recommend to anyone listening, if you are interested in Mary Shelley at all, or the Shelleys or anything, to look up the movie Gothic. It is a camp masterpiece. And it's all about the night that Mary Shelley came up with the concept of Frankenstein. Are we still searching, Jules?
Well, you see, I was trying to see if it, like, so my kids have to use this program called Accelerated Reader, and I was trying to see if on Accelerated Reader it counted it as a classic, but it doesn't say. So,
well, Google the publication year for me, because I don't know why I thought it was the 60s. If it was earlier than that, then.
That is not what I was looking for. Hold on.
Uh, 1954. Oh, okay, so it wasn't super duper off. Okay. Yeah, I would definitely consider that a classic. That's 70 years ago. Right? 50.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's classic.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways, if that, see, but even then it's like, I don't know. Yeah. Anyways, I love the Lord of the Rings, as you know, but that's who I am as a person right now. But I'm saying Jane Eyre to actually be my answer.
Cool. My answer is, of course, Little Women by Louisa May Alcott. I first read it when I was probably around 11. And I discovered it because I saw the movie first. I remember it was Christmas. And it was just me, my mom, and my sister at home. And Mom and Lacey were baking cookies. And I was in the living room with the Christmas tree. All the lights were off with the Christmas tree. And I just stumbled upon it. It was on HBO or something. And I was just immediately drawn in. by this story of these, because I had a sister and I had a mother and I was being raised primarily by my mother and my grandmother. So this whole amazing story about sisterhood and mothers and daughters and everything, I just immediately was sucked in. And so I, like, as soon right after I saw the movie for the first time, I got the book from the library, read it, was obsessed. And then it was either that same Christmas or the following Christmas, my mom got me a leather-bound Easton Press edition of it. It was Little Women and Little Men in this beautiful red and gold leather-bound edition. And she has a really sweet inscription inside of it. Like, she was just really proud of me for, like, how much I love to read and how young I was to read such a classic kind of big novel, you know, at the time. But I'm just, there's so much about it that I connect to, not just in terms of like being a sister and being a daughter, but I talked about this in the Little Women episode a lot about how I connect with Joe as like a queer figure. And there's a lot of evidence to suggest that Louisa May Alcott herself was either queer and or trans. And so that just, and to consider that from a perspective of someone in the 1860s, holy crap, that's just like, it's a lot to dissect, but it's fun too. And I like read, I've been slowly but surely reading Joe's Boys, which is the third book of the series. And it's all about like them when they're older, but also about the boys that are in Little Men when they're older. And even in the third novel, Jo is such an interesting character and how she's kind of queer. And I don't know. It's just, it's like a comfort thing, especially around the holidays. I always want to watch it and read it. And I just love it.
Well, it starts out, the first line is, Christmas won't be Christmas without presents. It's a Christmas book.
It's totally a Christmas book. Totally. Have you, either of you, I know you guys are familiar with the movies, but have you guys read it, either of you?
Yeah, I really like it. I didn't read it until I was, I mean, I didn't read it until like maybe 5 years ago. So I didn't really want to say it's my favorite classic novel, but I was obsessed with the 90s movie when I was a kid. Like, I was Joe in my heart. Like, I'm really a Meg, but I thought I was a Joe. And yeah, like, it was a big thing for my childhood, and I remember that, and I don't know why I waited so long to read it, but I love it.
I think I remember showing the movie to Julie in your Zanesville apartment, Heather. I think that was the first time you'd seen it, wasn't it, Julie?
Maybe. I simply do not remember this.
Oh, it was like around Friendsgiving or something, because I remember you and I were watching the movie and Heather was up fluttering around preparing for a dinner party. And
That very well may have happened. I certainly remember it. sorry about that, friend. I think I've seen it.
What? You just think? We have to watch it again next time we're together.
Buddy, I genuinely do not remember.
Watch the newer one, right?
No.
What?
The one with the one with Timmy? No, haven't seen it.
Yeah. Okay, when we're together for Christmas, we're watching it because I love it.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I watched it in theaters and sobbed.
Oh, man. Yeah, like, I love the new one, but the 90s one has my heart. And, like, Christian Bale is so yummy in it, and Winona Ryder is Joe, and she's so amazing, and just, oh, God, so good.
Gabriel Byrne, or is it Gabriel? No. Who is it?
Gabriel Byrne is Professor Bear.
Okay. See, I'm with you. I've seen it. I've definitely seen it.
I remember very vividly showing it to you, but because you, like everyone who sees it for the first time, was just like, F Amy. Oh my
goodness. Yeah, Amy sucks.
Amy's the worst. Amy does suck.
I have it in my iBooks on my phone. So at one point I have downloaded it to read it. I just have not read it yet.
Very good.
It's a good Christmas read. Yeah. Okay. So ladies, this time I'll start with Julie. Julie, what is your favorite contemporary novel or novel?
I am going to throw out there. You said contemporary. I don't know what I know what it means, but I Shoot. That doesn't work. What'd you say? What's classic, the cutoff?
Oh, I didn't say. It's open to interpretation. Whatever you would interpret as a contemporary novel.
Shit, I don't know. Well, my answer is Dune.
Oh, see? There you go.
My answer is Dune. I love Dune. I've read it. I've read it more times than I've read the other stuff. It's a big, fat, thick boy, and I love it so much. Because it's not only about, like, it's about what happens if a superhero becomes God. And then how that just doesn't work out, basically. I don't know. I think what I like about Dune is, technically it's set in our future. So it's like 10,000 years in our future. So Paul Atreides is like, he can trace his lines back to like the ancient Greece. Like that's kind of what it is. It's very Catholic novel. The Bene Gesserit, like it's basically a Catholic novel, but I don't know. I like it. It's also about like conservation and environmentalism, and it like it's all deep inside there because like the whole thing is that the Fremen are trying to retain water within the planet within Arrakis to terraform it, but I'm not sure if they know or not that like. The thing that makes them rich, this is a spoiler alert if you haven't seen Dune, but the thing that makes them rich is the spice, and the spice comes from the worms. So if you destroy the worms, you destroy the spice and your wealth. But the ultimate goal is to terraform Arrakis. And I love Dune.
Okay. Heather, what's your favorite contemporary novel?
So my first answer is Where the Crawdads Sing, but I feel like it really blew up because I read it when it first came out, and it's like, I don't reread books, but it's a book that I literally reread every year since the first time I read it. I love it so much because not only is it kind of like a mystery, but it's also like a nature novel, and like, it's just, like, if you read it, like, the first time I read it, I was like, oh, what? The second time I read it, I just don't want to spoil it for anybody, but the second time I read it, I was like, oh, that makes perfect sense. So yeah. I really liked that about it. The movie obviously doesn't do it justice, but one of the newer books that I've read that I really love is called Lessons in Chemistry, which is now an Apple Plus show, which is good. It's very good. But the book is amazing. Like, I read books really quickly. I read a lot of books a year, and this book I like just savored and read like over a 2-week time span, which I never do. And so I just like would giggle on the couch, and my husband would be like, okay, tell me what you read. Like, tell me what you, and it's like so cute and so good. And it's very feminist and sciencey, and I loved it.
Nice.
Can I come back? 'Cause Heather, you know what the answer is? Tender is the Flesh.
I'm going to comment on that book later, but go ahead.
I loved that book.
It's good. I added it to, Hillary asked us about like horror novels. I added it to that.
Oh, that's fair. Yeah, we can talk about that later.
Okay.
I love that book though. It was so good.
My favorite contemporary novel, it was hard, but I'm going to say Lost Souls by Poppy Zeebright. It was very formative for me for a lot of reasons. It's very queer, it's very taboo, it's very gothic, it's punk, it's goth, what's hard about it is I love it so much, but you can't recommend it to everybody because there's like violence and incest, mm-hmm. all kinds of, you know, taboo stuff, but it's so good. It's like if this experience of being at a rock concert was distilled into literature, like that's what it feels like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Read. That adrenaline and that like naughtiness and dirtiness and just, oh God, I just, oh, love that book. Heather said she doesn't reread books. I'm really guilty about it. I think it's the same reason like people with anxiety watch the same stuff over and over again. I'd read the same stuff over and over again. All of Poppy Zeebright's books are great. But Lost Souls, especially to me, is the most fun. And so, like I said, if I do think a lot of people should read it, and I think it is definitely queer cult camp and creepy. So if you like that kind of stuff that we talk about on this podcast, I think you will like it, but definitely check the trigger warnings before reading it. I read it in high school and I was never the same in a good way. Well, that's arguable, I guess. But yeah. What was my next question?
Nonfiction.
Nonfiction. Oh gosh. Okay. Heather, what's your favorite nonfiction book?
So I put Educated down. I think it's by Tara Westover. It is a story about this girl who grew up Mormon and had this really wild family. It's kind of like the Jeanette Wells Glass Castle. It was really good. It's just like how she, like, she has a PhD now and just kind of like her upbringing. But there's a lot of like, and I don't think you asked a question about poetry, but there's a group of poetry books that I really love, if we can constitute that as nonfiction. I forget who wrote them, but she wrote Homebody and who is that author? I'm trying to look it up real fast as we're talking.
Oh yeah, go for it.
Anyways, I'm not finding it. Oh, Milk and Honey and the Sun and Her Flower.
Oh, Ruby Carr.
Yes. I love all of those. Like, I'm obsessed with them. I have reread those. So that or Educated.
Oh, cool. Julie.
The Indifferent Stars Above by Daniel James Brown. It is an account and a recollection of the Donner Party as they jump off from Independence, Missouri in 1860-something, a little too late, and end up having to eat each other in the Sierra Nevadas. I had listened to a podcast, and this was the main, like, the primary source for the podcast. And they were highly praised the book. And I was like, yeah, sure. I was like, that was a really good, it was a really good episode. I was like, I need to read this book. And so I finally ended up just having to buy it as an ebook because I could not. I went to a bookstore and didn't have it. And I, for some reason, didn't want to order it on Amazon. So I was just like, you know what? I will just get it on ebook. And I plowed my way through it. I loved it so much. It was one of the best books I've ever read. I don't know what it was about it that I just connected with so much. But like, I liked that it gave, like the math formulations, like the, about the caloric intake that these people would have needed to survive. Like, because that was part of it too, is they were already so, emaciated from walking across like the salt flats in Utah that like, the not staying on the path basically was a huge mistake for them. So that was really, really good. But I've actually been on a nonfiction kick lately. I've been reading a lot of nonfiction. I just finished Into the Wild by John Krakauer. And I liked that. I'd read a bunch of Krakauer books. And so I was like, okay, like, so speaking of Mormons, I read Under the Banner of Heaven and I really liked that. That's something about the way he wrote that book, like that Krakauer wrote Under the Banner of Heaven. He did like a, what was happening in the 80s with like the Lafferty brothers and how they killed their sister-in-law. And then he juxtaposed that with the beginnings of Mormonism, and his kind of book alternated between those things. And I really liked that, which something like Into the Wild is not really like that as much. And then, sorry, this is me. I'm talking about John Krakauer hour. but I also read Where Men Win Glory about Pat Tillman, who was he played for like Arizona whatever football team, and he left the NFL and joined the Army, and like after 9/11. And it, what I liked about that book too is that it wasn't like, you really get behind the story of Pat Tillman and how he did not give an interview after he joined the military. He did not want to be used as a recruiting tool, even though the military and the government did that anyways. And ultimately, he died by friendly fire, and literally the government killed him and covered it up. And that was another one of those books where Krakauer uses the back-to-back sort of juxtaposition. He did the story of Tillman, but also the story of, like, the history of, like, conflict in Afghanistan. So I learned a lot, is what I'm saying. So those are some of my favorite nonfiction books.
Great. I'm glad that you're getting into Krakauer. I think I've only read maybe one of his books or so, but I'm glad that you...
Yeah, I bought two more. I bought two more. Yeah, he went on an expedition to Mount Everest, and it was, like, really, really bad. So I bought that one. And then he did...
Oh, is that Up in the Air?
Into Thin Air, maybe.
Into Thin Air, that's right. Yeah. That's it.
And then he did one about a rape in Missoula, Montana, and I got that one, too.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool. I have, like, a three-way tie. One is Disco Bloodbath by James St. James, republished as Party Monster. I talked about this book when we did the film adaptation of Party Monster, but it is about the true story of James St. James' experiences with his friendship with the murderer, Michael Alleg. It is an incredible book because not only does it, I mean, it's technically a true crime book, but it doesn't read like one. It gets into the murder, but James really, well, this sounds bad. He centers himself, but not in like a selfish way, but just in a realistic way of like, this is what I know, this is what I experienced, this is my point of view from being in the middle of the social circle that completely disintegrated because of this murder. Then it also deals a lot with drug use and drug abuse, and you know, James's struggle with that. It's really interesting. And just, it's so funny because it's, you know, it's about drugs and death and all this stuff, but it's also really funny. James St. James is hilarious. It's just really an entertaining read. So I recommend that to everyone. I also really love, it's kind of trashy, but I love it so much. Backstage Passes by Angela Bowie, who's David Bowie's first wife. It is about her youth and her meeting David and their years together. And it exposes a lot about David as a person, but it also just exposes a lot about what the early glam rock scene was like. And it's very interesting. It is kind of tabloidy, and, you know, she gets into stuff that probably wasn't her place to tell, but at the same time it was, because everything that David did affected her too. You know, they had a child together. They, when they set out, it was like, well, we're going to focus on David's career, but then when that's established, then we're going to focus on your career, Angie, and, you know, you're going to get your time to shine, because she wanted to be a star too. And then that just didn't happen, which wasn't fair to her. So, you know, seeing her story, side of the story, is really interesting. And it also proves how charismatic and incredible David Bowie is as an artist, because you can read this book, like me, learn all these not so great things about David Bowie and still be like, he's still a fucking genius and I'm obsessed with him. You know, it's just like him cheating on his wife and him, you know, getting addicted to drugs and him kind of backing out on things he promised, but you're still like, he's still incredible.
Yeah.
And his marriage with Angie, just, they just weren't meant to be together. You know what I mean? You kind of leave the book with, oh, well, they weren't. Because his next marriage was very happy and long, and, you know, it was just him and Angie were meant to be. But it's a very fun read as well. And my third one I wanted to mention, well, actually is two, both of the books by Mamrie Hart. Her first book, You Deserve a Drink, and then her second book, I've Got This Round. They're both comedic memoirs, and they are so funny and so fun and so relatable, and they really helped me, especially I've Got This Round, because it deals a lot with like a big breakup that she experienced. It kind of came out around the time when I had a big breakup and my whole life was changing, and it really helped, like, it just helped me a lot in terms of Mamrie as a comedian excuse me, and as a content creator in general, has helped me a lot. And I met her when she went on book tour for I've Got This Round, and I told her all that. And it was like a real fast paced type thing. It was like, oh, come up, say hi, you know, get a hug and get a picture and go. And of course, I'm trying to be like, you know, you made me so happy. Your books made me so happy. And she's like, quick, take a selfie with me before you make me cry. Mm-hmm. But she was so gracious. And both of those books are incredible. And I recommend those to everyone as well. Heather, I know you've read. Have you read both of Mamrie's books?
Yeah, you bought them both for me. And I read both of them. I love them.
I think I have one of them.
Yeah, I was about to say, Julie, I wasn't sure if you had read either one of them, but they're really good. I recommend.
You bought me one.
I did. Like, I remember when I worked at the bookstore, we got a bunch of copies of it for really cheap, and I just bought one for, like, everyone I knew. I'm like, everyone needs to read this book.
We still need to go to that place in one of the books in, what is it, in Pennsylvania, with the champagne hot tub and the rose hot tub.
Oh, yeah.
Totally. That'd be so fun. Yeah, that's definitely a road trip goal. What was my next question?
YA.
Oh, yes. Julie.
So.
We better have the same answer.
What?
We better have the same answer.
Uh-oh. Wait, what's your answer?
No, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I just read one recently that I really, really loved, and I was going to say it's my new favorite, but now I don't know, and now I think I'm going to answer wrong.
What's your new favorite?
The House in the Cerulean Sea.
It's so good.
I don't know if that was the answer. Is the answer supposed to be Twilight?
No.
Ow.
I'm glad I made you read The House in the Cerulean Sea, because I
genuinely loved it so much. But also it, my other, oh my God. Now I don't know what to say. Cause I also really loved, the Raven Cycle series by Maggie Stiefvater. I love that series. It was so good to me personally. That's my answer.
Heather.
Everyone should read The House on the Cerulean Sea. Cause it's really good. Hey, Heather, did you know there's a sequel coming out next year?
What? No.
Yes. There's a sequel coming out next September.
Okay, so I will not be explaining my answer. It's just full stop. The Hunger Games trilogy.
Oh, okay.
It's amazing. It's about Appalachia and overthrowing the government. Fuck yeah. I mean, yeah.
You know, I bought my set copy of The Hunger Games from Half Price Books when Hillary worked there, except it's the British version. So it's like in British English. Because that's what you guys had at that time. Like, you just had like the full set in British English in paperback. So currently there are children in Appalachian, Ohio, reading that version, because I have lent all of my Hunger Games out to my students this 9 weeks.
You and them.
Before I get into mine, speaking of sequels, Julie, did you know there's a sequel to Howl's Moving Castle?
Yes.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
I also loved, and I also lent out to my students, I loved Howl's Moving Castle. It's way different than the movie.
I'm glad you liked it, though.
I'll have to read the other one, because I haven't read it, but I need to.
My favorite young adult book is one that I don't know what happened to my copy. I think it's somewhere, but I haven't reread it in a long time. It's called Old Magic by Marianne Curley, who is an Australian author, and it is this really cute and interesting book that I wish had gotten. You know how, like, when Twilight came out and Hunger Games came out, there was just like a big, they were just adapting everything into films.
Yeah.
For better or for worse. It would have gone over so well with the Twilight crowd. I wish they would have made a movie of it. But it's about this girl who lives with her grandma, and they're both witches, And this new boy moves into town, and like she's instantly drawn to him and can tell that he has powers. Because he, and it turns out like there's a prophecy about him. He's like the seventh son of a seventh son or something like that. And so they connect over this prophecy, but they end up like traveling through time. It's so there's like, there's magic, there's time travel, there's, because of the time travel, they go back to like medieval times. So there's like this great portion of the book that's, you know, very Renaissance-y medieval fantasy. There's this like great romance, sexual tension between these two characters, and it's just, mwah, it's very good. I read it a million times in high school. And I had a runner up, but now I can't remember what I was going to say it was. Oh, okay. It doesn't matter. It might come to me. But yeah, that's my favorite young adult book. What was the next category?
The next category is sexiest.
Oh, fun. Okay, Heather, do you have an answer?
Not really. Like, I don't read sexy books these days. I mean, the sexiest thing I get into is Emily Henry, and it's real PG-13. So, I mean, I used to read really terrible fanfic back in the day, but, you know, I'm a mature woman. I don't know.
Well, tell me about Emily Henry.
Emily Henry. Oh, they're just like love stories, and there's like some touching. Like literally, they're PG-13.
Do they fade to black?
Yeah, it's usually some sort of like, oh, we can't do this.
See, but yeah. That's sexy in its own way. I feel, you know what I mean, like that unresolved sexual tension or that like.
Yeah.
Slow burn, you know, that could be fun.
Yes,
not everything has to be built. What about you, Jules?
Okay, so I took a different spin on this one. I'm gonna tell you about a romance novel that I read a long, long time ago.
Okay,
it was probably the year 2000. I was homesick from school, and I read this novel. Actually, I brought it with me, and now I lost it. Hold on, I'm gonna get up because I need to say the title. I brought it with me because I picked it off my shelf. Okay, where's it at? There it is. Oh, okay. So it's called The Outcast by Beverly Barton, and it is it's a silhouette, I think. Yes, it's an intimate moment silhouette romance novel. And all I remember about it is the guy was like in prison and she was clairvoyant. And like, for some reason, like I read that book and it stuck with me for 1,000 years and I loved it, but that's not actually my answer. That was the background to my answer. So like I read The Outcast on a day when I was homesick from school. Okay. And it was like the first time I read a romance novel. And then I just started reading a bunch of romance novels when I was a kid, like when I was like, you know, in middle school. And I read one, it was called The Morning Side of Dawn. And I couldn't find it. I was looking for it like recently, because I wanted to tell you guys about it. Now I can't find it because I looked it up. Oh, maybe I looked it up on my phone. Crap. Oh my gosh, what's her name? Oh, of course not. Oh, there it is. Okay. Justine Davis. You can buy it on paperback on Amazon for 96 cents. But for some reason, I thought this book was so sexy. Like, the main character, the girl, was a supermodel named Cassie, and she like fell in love. For some reason, I don't know why I thought it was so sexy, but like the guy was just supposed to be really hot and really buff, but he didn't have legs. And it was like the first time I'd read a romance novel with like a disabled main character, I think. And I don't know why, but it stuck in my brain for all these years, and I'm telling you about it now. So yeah, the Morning Side of Dawn.
Interesting.
Yeah, but they were like, I don't know, super in love, and like he was like, "Oh, you don't want me," and she's like, "No, but I do." I don't know. I loved it. I don't know why. First released in 1996.
Oh, nice. I've read a lot of sexy books and a lot of books that have had very sexy scenes. Like, there's a lot of Anne Rice that is really titillating and a lot of Poppy Z. Bright that's really titillating. But I've been reading, like, straight up legit romance novels here lately. And I don't know if it's the sexiest book I've ever read, but it's the best. I don't know if it's the sexiest book I've ever read, but it's the best sexy book I've ever read, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I told Julie about it. Heather, I didn't tell you very much about it, but I told you guys when I was reading it. It's called A Merry Little Meet Cute. I forget the author's names. It's written by two women. I think they're women. Let me tell you. What did you say?
Is it Christina Lauren?
I don't think so. I may be wrong. I'm not sure. I don't remember their names at all. Oh my God. Let me tell you how this book was like created in a lab for Hillary. So it's set around Christmas. I'm just going to tell you guys the whole plot because I have to, because it's insane. The main character is a plus-sized porn star. Okay. And the producer that she works with the most is transitioning from making pornography into making, like, he wants to make mainstream, like, quote unquote, regular movies. And he gets an opportunity to produce they're not called Hallmark movies. It's called, like, the Hope Channel, but it's Hallmark. It's the standard for Hallmark, right? He gets an opportunity to make a Hallmark Christmas movie. And he has it all ready to go, and it's about to start filming. They're going to film in this little, isolated, beautiful winter town in the middle of nowhere, you know, like you do.
Mm-hmm.
And at the last moment, the female star and a bunch of the crew members all get into, like, an accident or something, and they can't do it. And because of some wacky misunderstandings and shenanigans, he ends up having to hire a bunch of people from the adult film industry, including the main character, Bianca, who, remember, is fat, which makes me love her even more than I would anyway. And her co-star in the film is an ex-boy bander who has, like, a bad reputation that he's trying to clean up. So I know that all sounds ridiculous because it is, but the reason it's so sexy is because Bianca has been a fan of his forever. So she already has, like, a crush on this guy before ever even meeting him, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he is a fan of her adult films and her, like, OnlyFans. He's subscribed to her OnlyFans.
Oh, it's, and like, so contemporary because, like, OnlyFans, you know what I mean?
Right. It's called something else, but it's OnlyFans. You know what I mean? Yeah. And, like, they both have to be on their best behavior. He can't get in trouble and have any affairs, or his manager will drop him and it'll ruin his act he's trying to clean up. And she can't let anyone know that she's an adult film star, and she, you know, doesn't want to make a fool of herself and be like, oh my God, I've been a fan of you since you were in this boy band. So they already, like, it's insta-love because they both have history with each other. And before they eventually hook up, the tension is so great. And there's so much high stakes on them not being together. They can't be together. And there's a bunch of wacky shenanigans, and but it's so good and so funny. And like, as a fan of boy bands, I ate it up. As, like, a pervert, I ate it up. As a fat girl, I ate it up. As, like, a lover of Hallmark Christmas schlock stupidity, I loved it. Both of the main characters are both bisexual. A bunch of the periphery characters are queer. Bianca has two moms. It's just, there's Twilight references. There's, like, One Direction and NSYNC references. It's just, oh my God, it's perfect. It was the most fun I've had reading a book in a really long time. So do you see what I mean when I'm, like, made in a lab for Hillary? Like,
yeah, 100%. Yeah, yeah.
And I just love the fact that even though it's like a quote unquote heterosexual relationship, it's not really because they're both queer.
Yeah.
It's just, it was great. If you guys want a fun holiday read, definitely get that one.
I'm looking it up on my Libby right now. Because I've heard of it.
Do you have the author's names?
I did, and then I got engrossed in your, give me a second. Julie Murphy and Sierra Simone.
Oh, Julie Murphy sounds familiar.
It does.
That's familiar for some reason.
I don't know. There's two books. It's a trilogy too. There's like characters that you meet in the first one are the main characters in the second one, and then there's a third one about, I'm not sure who, but there's like three in the series, all written by those two same people, and it's really good. So thank you for letting me ramble and explain the whole story, because I had to.
Yeah. Hillary, I definitely went like wild on crack hour. It's fine.
All right. I think the next question was, what was the most disturbing or scariest book you've ever read? Do you guys have answers for that?
Yes.
Julie, you go first.
The Woman in Black was terrifying. It's the biggest fucking book I've ever read. It was horrifying. I know we talked a little bit about The Tender is the Flesh, but that was like a horror novel, but like actually scared me. Yeah, The Woman in Black.
Tender as the Flesh is also one of mine. I made Julie read it. My husband read it too. And it is like haunting. Like the one of the last lines is like so messed up. It's so good.
I feel like I told a guy about Tender as the Flesh at a professional development day for like all of the teachers in my county. I was like, hey. You got some hair, you've got painted fingernails, you are young, you're an English teacher, we're in this dystopian literature session together, let me tell you about Tender as the Flesh. And he added me on Facebook after that.
Oh, nice.
So, anyways, shout out to Robbie, who will never hear this, but I remember when I told you about Tender as the Flesh.
One more thing I want to add, Delicate Condition, I just read, and it's what American Horror Story is based on this season. It might have just, it's meant to be spooky, but maybe it's about pregnancy, so it might have just hit me hard where I am in my life, but like, it's about like, I don't know, gaslighting and the sisterhood of like, you know, womanhood, just in general. It is actually very, very, very good and very eerie at the same time.
I even came up with these questions, but I still had a hard time with this one, because even though I do read horror, mostly short stories, I feel the same way about short stories as I do short films. I think they're more effective in horror, because it gets to the meat faster, you know. But probably the most disturbing book I've ever read was probably Exquisite Corpse by Poppy Zeebright. Mainly, and the main reason is because even though it's a fictionalization, it's pretty much just Jeffrey Dahmer. So it was all the more disturbing knowing that it was based on true stuff. But of course, there's been some Stephen King here and there that I'm like, ooh, ooh. I love it. I mean, it's my favorite horror book, but I didn't find it scary or disturbing except for like one scene. But yeah, I think that Exquisite Corpse, I think, is a good enough answer. What was my next question?
Shakespeare.
Oh, yes. You can't talk about literature without getting into some Billy Shakes. Julie, what is your favorite Shakespeare play?
Okay, so that's a loaded question, but my answer is going to be it's basically the whole, like, I guess, quartet from Richard the Third to Henry V. So Richard the Third, one Henry IV, two Henry IV, and Henry V.
Henry Hopper.
Yeah, heavy lies the head that wears the crown. I love that shit. I eat it up. Obviously, I'm going to tell you, I do love, Romeo and Juliet. You know that. You know that. But deep down inside, I feel like I took all of the Shakespeare classes that OU had to offer. and honestly, but the histories resonated with me the most. I loved, when I went through Richard III, I loved that. So that is my favorite. They're just fun and really good. And I don't know, I'm a history nerd, so I guess it really makes sense.
Yeah, that's a good answer.
I also really like Titus.
Really like what?
Titus.
Titus, I was going to say, we'll get to me. Go ahead, Ed.
Hamlet. I don't really have an explanation.
Sons of Anarchy.
I mean, Sons of Anarchy is loosely based on Hamlet, and I didn't know that and I hadn't read Hamlet until I was watching it, and then I looked it up and I had to read Hamlet, but I still love Hamlet because it's amazing and terrible and great.
Fair.
I have a tie. Mine is two complete opposite ends of the Shakespeare spectrum, which is Titus Andronicus. Nice. And Midsummer Night's Dream. I love Midsummer Night's Dream. I think it's so funny. It's like my feel good Shakespeare play. I think all the adaptations are hilarious. There's so many different ways to adapt it and interpret it, and there's just so much going on. It's a lot, but it's really funny. And Titus is just so dark and twisted. It's so twisted. I just love it.
Good.
I'm going to be honest, I haven't really read all the histories. So I'm glad that, Julie, you mentioned those, because I would have nothing to contribute on that end.
Yeah, I love the histories. I don't know. I'm a nerd, though. But, and you know what? I also really like Macbeth. I'm not going to lie. And one of the Coens just did a new Macbeth with Denzel Washington.
Oh, I watched it.
It's good.
Yeah. It's funny. I like Hamlet, but when I was in theater school, we used Hamlet a lot as the pinpoint when studying playwriting structure, to the point where it kind of almost ruined Hamlet for me, because I've had to pick it apart and look at it so analytically that I can't even enjoy the story of it anymore. I just see the formulas that are in it. And that's not a bad thing. I mean, they're I'm not saying it's formulaic in a derogatory way, but I just think of playwriting class.
you know what I think of when I hear Hamlet?
What?
Shit, Hamlet, it's a fucking vampire. Shit, get him. And I think about Abraham Lincoln getting hammered to death in the butt.
Oh goodness. So I wasn't sure if you guys would have an answer for this next one. But are there any plays that you've read, specifically ones that you haven't necessarily, you've only experienced as a form of literature and not seen performed?
I do. I know I get a lot of hate for not liking musicals, but I love I absolutely love plays. A Doll's House. I've never actually seen A Doll's House, but I've read it and I absolutely love it.
Oh, very cool. There was a production of it recently in New York with
I can't think of her name.
Oh my god. She's one of my favorite actresses. I can't remember her name. Jessica Chastain. Yes. Thank you.
Yes.
What about you, Jules?
Okay, so I misinterpreted your question at first. But I'm gonna say this. So last year when I was doing my like student like observations, I had to read A Streetcar Named Desire before I was ever able to watch it. Like I'd never seen it. And so I really, really liked it. I really, really liked that. But if I'm cheating and saying going with just a movie adaptation, obviously it's The Crucible.
Oh, yeah. I mean, ooh, that's a really good answer. I didn't think about that.
Yeah. Because, like, I haven't seen it live, but I've seen it in a movie, and it's The Crucible. Well,
yeah. I was going to say, my answer is the same, because, like, my favorite play is Angels in America. But I've never seen it performed live. I've only seen
yeah.
any series version. So I've technically, I've seen it adapted, but I've never seen it on stage. But it's still my favorite play.
Yeah.
But Crucible is a very close second. That's a good answer. I didn't think about that.
Oh, I love the, I'm going to teach it this year. That's why I'm so excited. I know. All these kids, they're not going to appreciate it the way I am.
You'll have some, you'll have one little weirdo in your class, like Hillary was her weirdo, who already knew all the monologues. Like, you'll have some weird little freak that connects with Abigail on some twisted level, and it'll be fine. Was my next question favorite author?
Yeah.
Okay, favorite author, ladies.
I had a hard time answering this. I read so many books, but like the only thing I could think of was, and I think I'm unfortunately saying her name correctly, Gillian Flynn. Like,
ooh, answer.
Because she's only written like three novels and I love them. And I'm like, I need another one. Like, I loved them. But I don't know. I've read a lot of things, but.
And she was really cool.
What about you, Jules?
I don't have a favorite author. I feel like I can't answer that because I feel like I don't read enough, and like obviously I'm just gonna be like J.R.R. Tolkien.
No, I mean that's valid.
I mean, considering my entire life right now is Lord of the Rings, like my whole life right now, like it is a lot, and that's where I am right now. So yeah, Tolkien. Let's roll. I mean, okay. Last night, as I put The Hobbit on, okay, I was watching The Hobbit. I was furiously Googling maps of Middle Earth, or Arda, if you will, from the first age of the world. Like, Lord of the Rings takes place in the third age. So I was looking for the first age because there's a whole chunk of Middle Earth that fell into the sea at some point, and I was trying to figure out where the cutoff was. So when I tell you I'm in Hobbit Autumn, I mean it. I literally right now I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 tabs open that are Lord of the Rings adjacent. And that's just on my laptop. Couldn't tell you what's on my phone.
Sorry. Wow. Yeah.
So, yeah. So, I feel like I can say Tolkien and it'd be true.
That's that.
Ooh.
What?
The last question? Oh, wait, go ahead.
Oh, no, sorry. I was just like, I was cringing over myself, but actually I don't cringe because I've killed the part of me that cringes.
Good. That's what it should be. I was going to say, this is hard for me to answer on probably like an opposite end of the spectrum where I feel like, Heather, it was hard for you to pick a author because you've read so many different books by so many different people. I latch on to authors and will read like a bunch of stuff of theirs to a point where like now I have a million favorite authors. So mine are Poppy Z. Bright is number one. Alice Hoffman is a close second.
Ooh, yeah.
Sarah Addison Allen is one of my favorites. I still have a bunch of books of hers I still need to read, but I really love the ones I have. Anne Rice. I think Stephen King. Yeah. So I could go on forever. Like, once I like someone's book, I'm reading a lot of their other stuff, and I get kind of obsessive over them.
Oh, that's fair. I guess that's me with John Krakauer right now.
Yeah. I mean, so it's easy. If you are like well-read and you read a bunch of different things, it's like, oh, well, it's hard to choose. Or if you're like a dork like me, it's just like, oh, well, I'm just going to obsessively read everything by this person. Then it's hard as well. Those are my many answers. The last question was, I think, are there any authors that you consider to be overrated?
John Green.
Ooh.
Thank you.
Is it just not, I haven't read a John Green novel, but are they just not good? Like, are they just like fine?
They're just fine.
Okay. A lot of my kids are reading John Green novels just because they're easy and they get the points they need. But
so many better things you could be reading if that's what you want to read.
Yeah. Okay. I just wasn't sure. I feel like they probably resonate a lot with kids, and I think that's supposed to be his audience, but like, who cares? You know what I mean? Like, we read all that kind of stuff anyways. But
yeah, just, there's so many other books I could recommend to teenagers if they're into like romance or whatever. Like, it's not that.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. I don't know if there's any that I think are overrated, but like, have any of you read the Court of Thorns and Roses books?
No.
No, but here's the thing. Like, it's so funny because I see them talking about it on Book Talk constantly.
Yeah. And I'm trying to get away from Book Talk. I don't want to hear people talk about books.
What?
I hate Book Talk. I am not interested in Book Talk. I always click not interested. I don't want to be there.
How dare you?
I'm sorry. I just don't want to be there. I don't want people's opinions. I want to read them for myself.
Well, just so you know, Book Talk is how we found Tinder is the Flesh. So,
well, and thank God, like, I'm fine to get Book Talk third handed. You know what I mean? You get it. They have it first hand. You get it second hand, and then you give it to me third hand. That's fine. But I don't want to experience it.
What kills me about the ACOTAR books is that there are so many people who are just like, oh, they're so spicy, they're so hot. But then when I actually do research on like how spicy they are, they're not really the spicy.
Interesting.
Because Book Talk like got me convinced that I wanted to read them. And then I actually did research. It's just like, it's a fantasy series. Like, it's not that spicy. If I'm going to read smut, it better be smutty. I ain't wasting my time.
Like, yeah.
Come on now. I don't know.
Also, have you heard of the book called The Fourth Wing?
Yes. Yeah, I've heard of it, but I don't know anything about it, really.
Now, we've gotten to the portion of your podcast where I just ask you about books I've seen, and I just want to know if you've read them. actually, I have a question. I brought a question to the party. I should have posed it to you before. But do you have any books that stand out as did not finishes?
Oh, 13 Reasons Why.
Good for you. I just started a book called Eileen, and it was supposed to be like spooky, and I think it's gonna be an Anne Hathaway movie soon. I could not finish.
Yeah. Yeah. You should have done what I did, which was just go and read the Wikipedia article about it and get the gist. Because I was like, oh, this sounds like a movie that I'd really like. Because it sounded like a twisted version of Carol. And then I read the Wikipedia article. I'm just like, oh, that wasn't that great.
Yeah, so I went out of my comfort zone and I joined this Facebook, like, book group. Mm-hmm. I will not name drop them in case, you know. But so I went and I made a post on there being brave. And because I don't do this kind of stuff. And I was like, you know, I started Eileen. I don't know. Like, I just made this post. And I got a thing back that was like, you can't post this. It's like, don't ask if you can't finish a book. And it was just like all these stipulations. And I was like, oh, my God. Like, I thought this was an inclusive place.
Huh.
And it was just like, nope, we don't ask if you can't finish a book. Like, don't ask if it's worth finishing. Nope. You can't ask this question.
That's weird.
And I'm like, oh, okay, sorry I asked about it. I want to know if people were like, yes, you definitely have to finish this book. It was so good. Like,
Oh, yeah, I see what you're saying.
I just wanted to hear, like, absolutely, you need to see this through. And I'm just like, cool. But no, I never got that because I never got to post anything. So I'm anti this group now.
Oh, you should have name dropped them then. No, I'm kidding.
They might be fine. I don't know. But
no, I already don't like them. They hurt my friend's feelings. I'm done. I'm for damn. No, I didn't.
Just so you know, in the middle of this podcast, my husband came home from work and I asked him to bring me cheese, and I've been sitting on my bed eating it like a mouse. So just
imagine that. That's adorable.
There is one book that I totally forgot about until I shifted my position in bed and saw it on my shelf, and then I'm like, oh shit, I forgot to mention this one. There's this great book called Weird Like Us by Ann Powers that is about bohemianism and found families and subcultures, and it helped me a lot when I was younger. I think I found it in high school or early in college, but it helped me a lot with like my identity as like an artist and just kind of being different and how that was okay. So that is another really great nonfiction book for anyone who's interested. Were there any other books that you guys really like that you wanted to mention? No?
Not, not really.
Okay, good. Well, I'm glad that my questions kind of covered all the bases. So like I said at the beginning, I hope you guys, you know, made you guys think of some of your favorite ones. And let us know. You can email the podcast at wearetheweirdospodcast@gmail.com and tell me about some of your favorite books, or you can ask us questions about the books that we mentioned on here in this episode. And for that matter, you can email us about anything, any questions, any requests, anything whatsoever. You can also hit us up on Twitter. The podcast has its own account, and then I have my own personal account that you can hit us up on. Same goes with Instagram. We're really easy to find. If you just look up We Are the Weirdos, you can find us. And yeah, we appreciate you guys listening. I hope you all had a happy Thanksgiving. And we will see you on the next episode. Hope probably for something Christmassy. See, haven't decided yet. So thank you to Julie and Heather for joining me.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
And until next time, we are the Weirdos, mister.